Did they use Lan well enough in season two is a podcast episode.
Yes.
I don't think that that's like today's episode, because that'll be like a, I feel like we'll go on a 20-minute like, it wasn't part of what we discussed. And I
you
feel
like thoughts?
We could go down. I have thoughts and I don't want to like, I want to like go through at least on the things that we said. Did they screw up? Because like, we could talk about Lan fear for the like, entire hour.
Hey everyone, welcome to Barside Chats. I'm Brian the Gleeman.
And I'm Matt the Innkeeper.
And this is a Wheel of Time podcast from the Dusty Wheel. Welcome back to Barside Chats. It's me, Brian the Gleeman. We are back from a short hiatus. A little over 6 months ago, we released an episode titled How Not to Screw Up Season 2. And now that Season 2 is over and completed, I thought it would be great to reunite the team and look back at our predictions and see how we did. So, without further ado, let's get into it. Here with me today are my co-host and good friend, Matt the Innkeeper, as well as my good friend, Honest the Innkeeper, both obviously from the Dusty Wheel. Matt, Honest, how are you guys doing today?
I'm just happy that I like called like 6 months ago that I want to be back on the pod, and I'm here, so I'm just happy
you
to
invited
be
yourself
on the,
back, man.
Yeah, so I whatever happened in the last 6 months doesn't really matter. I'm back on Barside, so I'm just happy to be at the Barside.
I want to say you are allowed.
Note to future guests, this might not work for you.
I just want to say you are allowed again once in 6 months. In six months, which like pairs nicely, I think, for Jordan Con, right? So you'd be allowed back on at that point.
We'd be back on in Jordan Con.
This would just be our, this would just be a thing. Every 6 months, we're willing to talk, the three of us. So, no, I'm excited to be back. It was so much fun, actually, listening to our conversation. That is, it's become that episode for me has become a classic in my mind. Like that is, it's a quick like 30-40 minute, and we're just like minutes. We are just like there's not a slow moment in the whole thing. We're just jumping in and talking over each other and what we're really excited about. You could feel, and it was like palpable how excited we were to finally be getting a season two. And so I can't wait to debrief with you both.
All right, so why don't we get right into it then? Question of the hour. Did they screw up season two?
Well, that's a great question, Brian. Let me ask.
Yes or no? It's a yes or no answer.
Not according to us 6 months ago, they did not. From what I listened to, I would say, I'm going to guess we can, I know we're going to talk about these and I have some highlights for myself. I would say about 70 to 80%, I feel like, of the things we said, you know, they've got to do this, or if they do this, they've screwed it up. They didn't do those things, or they must do this, or they will have screwed it up. They did those things. And then the 20% is kind of like a mixed bag for me. Like they did some of it, but they didn't do all of the thing, or they didn't, they did a portion. You know, it's kind of that like, yeah, they didn't really hit it maybe as nicely as we wanted, but they did kind of go down the road at least. I'm excited to this, but did either of you hear the name Lanfear? Did I say Lanfear at all in those 38 minutes?
I brought up Lanfear and you were like, you like didn't want to talk about it or something.
What happened? Like, I don't even understand. Like, I listened and I was like, I don't know how it wasn't like, if you don't have Lanfear and Lanfear doesn't own the season, you've screwed up. Like,
we talked about one Forsaken, like we need another Forsaken, but we didn't specify which one.
What happened? I don't even understand. I think
you didn't want to like, you didn't want to talk about screwing up season two and Lanfear in the same conversation. So you just decided to like, you were like, there's no way they're going to screw up Lanfear. So you didn't want to talk about it. I think that's what happened.
That's exactly the wildest missing moment in this, because you, Brian, you said, did they screw up season two? And all I could think of was, no, they rocked Lanfear. And so then you couldn't, like, that should have been on my list. But like, if get Lanfear right, I don't care about anything else. So
Honest, do you think they screwed up season two?
No, not at all. because of Lanfear, who we didn't talk about, you know? So, yeah.
That's the weird thing is...
So basically, what I'm hearing is if they didn't have Lanfear, they would have screwed up season two. And because they had Lanfear, nothing else matters. So they didn't screw up season two. And so season two is officially not screwed up. That's the rating from YouTube.
Yes.
I mean, okay, the things we spoke about, right? Like let's say, like, how can you screw up Rand, right? And we were talking about it's hard to screw up Rand. And we need
hard to screw up.
Yeah, Rand. Like, exactly. You know, like, we need his journey. We need him being, you know, freaking out. We need him in Carrion and all that. And that all happened, but was, like, better with Lanfear and Celine being in that conversation. And then even though I think we spent a little time, some time talking about when Moraine should come into the picture. And I think we said it should be fairly early. Like, it shouldn't be too early. But by, like, episode two, and I think it was episode four is when she shows up.
Yeah.
But we didn't really feel that absence because we had... I mean, Did I say a date with Lanfear, and we had a date with Lanfear?
That's exactly what you did, and I was thinking about that when I listened to it. You said the question was, if for those of you who... first of all, if you're listening to this and you have not listened to our episode about how not to...
What are you doing?
Stop right now, go listen to it, and then come back, because we're going to talk about it. But in that episode, Matt said, we don't want tea with the Shamayo. And one of us said, you mean you don't want a date with the Shamayo? And then suddenly someone was like, what about a date with Lanfear? And I was like, okay, we can have a date with Lanfear. And then we moved on from the conversation. But we got multiple, like, I guess, dates with Lanfear.
I mean, date night, so, under the stars?
Those are some, like,
on the stars,
some friends with benefits. Yeah.
With a Myrdral death nearby. And
I mean, a
light bondage.
Oh, I mean, in like a fancy party with fancy clothes. I mean, that
fancy
was
clothes. Yeah, that's a official
wine
right there.
Yeah.
I remember.
This is not casual.
I remember, like, I can't believe you did say that, and that we did get that. Like, I think we were kind of, I don't think any of us really conceived of where they're going to go with Celine and Lanfear. They went places that I don't think that we were really talking about. And the fact that we had multiple dates is really funny. I never put it in those terms. Now that you're putting it in the term of, like, they went on dates together during season two, I'm like, they did go on dates.
I mean, like, let me take you to the hillside or whatever. Like,
let me take you to my family's cabin in the woods. Yeah.
Let's go.
There's no one around for hundreds of miles.
Let's go crash a party, you know? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. No. And what was interesting about that to me was we talked about books two and three Rand.
Yep.
You know, bringing this back to the Rand conversation and the Moraine conversation. But it was like, we talked about, like, combining the plots of two and three. We needed Rand to get from wherever he was to either Fama or Tyr. And he had to fight with the demons within himself.
Yep.
And there had to be a battle at the end. There had to be a fight at the end. And we all basically said, I think Matt was the one that said, and it doesn't matter how they do it as long as they do it. And then that's exactly what they did. They gave us that exact progression of events. And they threw in Lanfear and they used her as Rand's foil for the whole season. Up until the finale. And Moraine, like you said, Honest, was, like, kind of late. She didn't show up till episode four, which I think is fine. I mean, we can talk about the Moraine plotline in a minute, but we didn't really miss her because we had Lanfear, and that made the first four episodes feel very Rand-centric and flow smoothly, I thought. So they definitely did not screw up the Rand plot.
Yeah, I remember when I listened to myself talk, it was early on in a conversation in that episode where I was like, you've got to give us Rand from books two or three or one of the or both or merge them. And I was like, he has to go into the world. He has to be conflicted about his friends. He has to be hit up by dark friends. He has to feel misunderstood. He has to struggle with the power. And then he has to eventually, like, make that progression to Falma or Tyr. And he has to battle with a Forsaken. at the very end for this to all work.
And that's exactly what we got.
And I was like, oh, wow. Okay, yeah, we did get that. I remember that was the first part of the episode, and I was like, oh, damn, yeah. They did give us that in season two. Which I remember being really happy about in season two when we watched, like, as soon as episode two hit cold open, Rand was on the ground and he was like crying and like in, like just like mad, like in his head all about like having killed his friends in a dream state. And I was like, yes, you've started us down the journey of Rand in this moment that I wanted to see. And they pulled off, I think, the Rand sequence and his arc in this in a way that, like we talked about, like how not to screw up season two. They did it. They did not screw up season two when it came to Rand.
Were there any moments in the Rand plotline that you feel didn't work? That they did screw up? Did they screw up any moments in the plotline?
The very end, I'm still thinking about his end with Ishamael. Like, that's the one, I don't know that, conflicted isn't the right word. I'm still like contemplating like what we saw with Rand. I liked his sequence with Ishamael, with Matt, and I liked the dagger aspect of what they did. And that moment though, when he stands up, walks through and like kills Ishamael, like there's like, I just have this moment of like, I don't know how I feel about it. But at the same point, that is like, his sword was instrumental in killing Ishamael at the end of book two. So, I just on the surface, nothing's coming to mind other than kind of just that final moment with Ishamael. I'm still thinking it through.
Yeah, I would probably say the same thing because I think we spoke about a big battle at the end. And yes, there was a big battle in the end. The whole episode 8 was a battle. But I don't think Rand actually had a fight again. So we can kind of maybe say there wasn't an actual fight. Yes, he was involved in that, you know, standstill, and his friends came to his aid. And so it worked within the narrative that you have to be together to be able to fight this battle. But it would have been nice if we had a small moment of actual Rand versus Ishamael. And we really didn't. So it's a choice. I think it worked within the story they were telling. But with what we were maybe going for, maybe we wanted a certain type of fight. Because literally, in all the first three books, there is an actual fight to some degree. The second, sword fight, right. I mean, no, the second book, end of book two is a sword fight. End of book three is like a power fight.
Yeah, that's right. So I do want to remark on that. Like, we didn't see Rand gain channeling control in a very demonstrable way. You had him that moment like against Turok.
Right.
So it was like, but he's behind maybe where Jordan put him in the books, if you think about merging books two and three, because you have that book three sequence where he kind of goes out on his own and he does begin kind of it builds up until he gets a tier and he has that where it's more of a one power battle. Whereas the first two books are unsatisfyingly, like, they don't convince me that he's like a great channeler in any way. So I'm not annoyed by that because I didn't want to see him be a great swordsman. I know that bothers some people, but I was like, no, don't go down this road where it's like, no, he has all of Luz Theron's memories, so he's great at it, whatever. No, don't do that. Yeah. Like, Egwene is the one learning how to channel, right? Like, these others are actually learning how to channel. He has not learned how to channel, and turning him to a great channeler in that moment to fight Ishamael, I think, would have also been weird. So I think you're right. I wanted a fight with the Forsaken. The way they wrote it, I don't think it would have worked as well, in my opinion. So I think it was more – go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I would just say, like, the part about this sequence that I think is the reason it didn't work is because we didn't get enough of a buildup of a of enemyhood between Rand and Ishamael for the whole season.
Yeah.
Because Rand is against Lanfear she's with Lanfear the first half of the season, against Lanfear for the second half of the season, and then they ally at the end of episode 7 temporarily. And then he faces Ishamael, and it's almost like this, like, Who are you again?
Yeah.
Why? I mean,
oh, do they even talk before that?
Spent more time with Matt and Perrin this season than he spent with Rand.
Yeah, they talk briefly in the dream. There's that brief
moment. We even kind of speculate. Is that even Ishamael or is that Lanfear?
I thought Ishamael references.
But even if it was,
right,
it was too short.
Right. I'm just saying.
Doesn't it felt like a dream?
Doesn't Ishamael say like we meet again or something, but in the flesh or something?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think he references it like. That's why I think it was probably him.
But there wasn't, you know, like in the books, Ishamael is like constant antagonizing Rand in dreams throughout the entire book two and even book three.
Yep.
And it's an ongoing antagonism so that when he finally meets, he's like, you, the one who's been torturing me this whole time.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's like justification for the fight. And in the end of season two, in episode eight, they have. He almost just like accidentally runs into Ishamael and Ishamael's attacking. Like, it kind of just comes out of the blue. And it felt like an unsatisfying ending because of that, in my opinion. Partly because, like, if there had been more of a buildup and more of a sense that, like, Rand wants to kill Ishamael for, you know, for good reasons, then it would have resonated a little bit more. And the fact that he didn't. We didn't get that too much. It felt like kind of the weakest part of the Rand plot.
Yeah, even Ishamael saying, wait, he's here too soon. Yeah, like that. And maybe that's why there's that contemplation moment where I'm just like, I don't know. Something about it just doesn't feel like it really hit at the end. And I think what you're bringing up, Ryan, is probably what it is that the conflict between them was not, you know, you had this whole idea of like Lanfear's like
a symmetrical conflict.
Yeah, because Lanfear's like, well, Ishamael's trying to, you know, he's holding your friends. You've got to go out there. But Ishamael wasn't coming at him. Like, they maybe missed an opportunity. Maybe they cut it. Ishamael being there in the dream with Rand at the beginning, the cold open of episode two, like, similar to how he shows up in the later dream when Lanfear interrupts it. I think if we had seen this kind of a little, just short, persistent moments where Ishamael is getting into his head in the dream world, it might have felt like, and that he was pushing him
something
a little bit
that
more.
Just... Yeah. Push him over the edge a little bit. Yeah. I'm going to make a very controversial analogy here, and everybody's going to hate me, but I'm going to do it anyway because.
All right, Brian.
It kind of works for me. The relationship between Ishamael and Rand is not symmetrical because Ishamael is thinking about Luz Theron. His relationship with Rand goes back 3,000 years. Rand's relationship with Ishamael goes back 6 months, and really for 5 minutes, 6 months ago. And in the movie, the Rogue One, the Star Wars movie, the main character, what's her name?
Tell us how much you like Rogue One. Jane Eris?
What was the main character?
Jane something?
Jen Erso. That's
Jen Erso.
Right. Jen Erso.
Yeah, there you go.
So Jen Erso witnesses Ambassador Krennic. Now remember his name. Ambassador Krennic kill her father. And for the entire movie, she's like, I'm going to fight back against the Empire who killed my father. Or at least kidnapped my father. And then later the father dies. Spoilers for Rogue One, by the way. And then at the end, I'll put a spoiler at the beginning. But at the end, they finally have a confrontation, and Jen Erso basically like, I'm Jen Erso, you killed my father, prepare to die. And Ambassador Krennic is like, who are you? Like, he doesn't even remember her.
Right.
He doesn't even know who she is. And that was a very unsatisfying moment for me because I was like, you have this very asymmetrical
relationship. You know the satisfying
one
moment?
One person is carrying a vendetta for the entire story, and the other one doesn't even know they exist. And so you sort of have this similar dynamic with Rand and Ishamael, which is Ishamael's carrying this vendetta, this like history and all this baggage for thousands of years. And Rand is taking the brunt of it. And then he gets to the tower and he's like, I don't really know who you are. You screwed me over 6 months ago and you're attacking my friend, so I'll kill you now. But it's not a relationship.
Yeah.
You know, it's not
that's a good point.
It's not a protagonist-antagonist relationship that has been developed in the show.
Yeah. I mean, I like you made that analogy to make your point, but no one remembers Rogue One for that. They remember Darth Vader at the end, and that's why the movie is... People like it, but...
People can be wrong.
But no, you're right. I mean, I think, you know, there's Shamil as a villain. It was compelling not because of his antagonism to Rand, really, but his kind of antagonism in general as a leader person for the Shadow, I think.
And exactly.
It worked and well.
I think it works well, but it works. It almost like sidesteps the screw up, right? Like it's almost like you didn't do probably what you should have done, but what you did worked really, really well anyway.
Right.
So okay, we like it. Ishmael's cool. We dig it.
He was cool.
But I think that's part of why that finale, that specific moment in the finale, didn't really work so well for me.
Yeah.
Is because I didn't feel like there was much tension between Rand and Ishmael when they finally met.
Well. I think we need to acknowledge this since we've talked about the Lanfear part and you're the Shamael. There are things that we didn't know which was like that they would do these other things that would make some of the things that would have bothered us not as maybe relevant. Like a Shamael, I had no concept that he was going to play such a big role and that I was going to like it so much. Like the Forsaken in general, that they were going to be so overpowering as far as how much I liked the season. That other little things that, like, I'm annoyed by this thing, were not as relevant. But prophecy. We brought up prophecy. And I think, I don't know if it was me, but I was like, give us some prophecy, damn it.
Did you see it bannered across the sky?
I know, that's the funniest thing.
Yeah, bannered across the sky. That was mentioned.
They gave you prophecy.
I know.
They showed it to you.
What about the blah, blah, blah prophecy about blah...
Blood, when we blood, did blood, talk about blood clots,
blood, blah, blah, stabs, blah, like it was something, it was a blah, blah prophecy.
Yeah,
yeah, that was mentioned.
Like the
a
dark,
times too.
And the dark, they gave us the dark prophecy. They gave us prophecies about Rand and Fal'Dara. You know, we got some Varen even in there. Like, we did get that, right? Was that satisfying to you, Anas? Were you like, finally, we have some, they gave it, I'm happy.
I think so. I think they didn't go overboard with it, but they had enough of it there to be like, oh, like this is important because like they're, you know, the protagonists are not just coming up with, you know, their own plan. There is something that they can look to be like, it's okay.
Objective standard.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. You know, like we have a vision because of this. And Varen was like, we have to support the dragon. We can't clip his, you know, his wings. So I think there was enough there. I don't think they could have done more. I think they even had it a little bit with Vienda saying he's the chief of chiefs. Like we're you know, like things like that.
We're looking for him.
And at the end, looking up to him. So I think there's enough there.
You're missing the Guitar Amoroso scene.
Yeah, Guitar Amoroso.
Which is, while it's not technically a prophecy or foretelling, it is a mystical
guidance
symbol of what's happening.
I don't know if you heard Matt and I talked about this a little bit on last week's show, that it was cool. It was just like too little, I think. Like it was just not enough for me to be convinced that Moraine and Swan have to change their lives because they saw someone die saying the dragon's been reborn. Like, to us, that is a huge thing. But to them, it just didn't seem as... Like, that cold open... And, you know, we can talk about cold opens now and how, you know, what we thought about maybe the first cold open and the last cold open. But I just felt... I think they've shown us enough where if Elida next season does a foretelling, we know what that would mean, you know? So things like that, I think they've given us enough... I feel like Min, like if we talk about prophecy and like, you know, viewings, I feel like we didn't have enough Min viewings. We had like one Min viewing. I could be wrong, but I feel like we just had the Matt one, right?
Yeah, I think you're
and
right.
And that just feels like you had so much of Min and we only had that. And we had the strange Matt, not prophecy, but like... Tea prophecy? I don't know what that was. The tea viewings?
The tea vision?
Yeah, the tea vision
stuff. When you say strange, you mean awesome?
No, I know it's awesome. It's just, I mean, I don't know what it was.
You mean the non-canon tea vision?
Yeah, exactly.
That was my favorite.
No, it's just like, I think they gave it to us in different ways.
Yeah.
And I think it worked.
Well, that's one of the criticisms we had.
We did not
right?
talk about Matt in the How Did We Not Screw Up season two episode. We did not really talk about Matt at all. I think maybe there was a brief mention, but it was not one of the main things.
We didn't talk about the horn at all.
Oh my gosh, we didn't
talk about the horn at all.
Oh, we said if we don't see Matt gambling, they've screwed up. Yes. And
I mean, it was probably one of the best scenes in that episode.
But yeah. Do you feel that the Matt plot line at all was screwed up? Is there anything about that you felt like just... that they screwed up in a particular moment? Like, I know we agree
series. This is how I look at the Matt plot line. If I look at the Matt plot line from the beginning of the books to the end of The Great Hunt, or even the middle of The Dragon Reborn, and I see season one and season two, where we are with Matt is kind of a similar journey. I don't think we really liked Matt, you know, Dagger Matt, and his journey in the first two seasons hasn't been that great. And then at the end, we're like, Matt is so cool. And we're kind of there. So I think it works for me.
I just feel like they missed, and I think this still holds true, even when I go back and watch the episodes, like season two, and I believe this because it happens to me, it's just so rewatchable. It's a lot of fun to go back.
So rewatchable.
But Matt is so – it's annoying what they seem to have missed – opportunities with Matt,
right?
Like there, it still feels like you go through the early episodes and you're like, oh yeah, like this was so easy. Like he's in the White Tower. There's a warder training yard. You've actually used it before. You've shown us the warder training. You've actually shown us people there. Like Matt somehow kind of being out and about, but wanting to leave Tarvalon, and still you could have done the whole Min thing. Even Min and Matt sitting at the bar. There was something that could have happened there. Like Matt in a scene with Lanfear, and all you give us is 4 seconds. You know, it's like 15 seconds of Matt with Lanfear is great, but like there's opportunities there. So it just felt like there was more they could have. There were easy opportunities to build Matt and our understanding of his character and his arc. Even keeping what they had, and I think he would have still, you still could have given us this ending and it would have worked. I just feel like still to this day, like we just didn't, not that we said it was required in our previous episode. I just still feel like there was, there was an absent 5 minutes of Matt in this whole season, right. I think that would have really would have added to what we experienced.
I think we can ask this question now then, right? Did they screw up Matt in season two by not giving us the Luckbender?
No. And the reason why I would say this, similar to the Rand, they did not, you've got to build towards it. And I don't think that they had built towards it. So I think that you could build in some kind of Luckbender, like maybe he's still connected, maybe he goes back to I don't want this to turn into a season three thing, but yeah. I don't think that the absence of Luckbender, the way they gave us Matt in this, was a screw up.
Necessary. Yeah. So, I don't think so either. I think it would have complicated.
You don't want it to be how not to screw up season plot. Three.
Yeah, right.
Stay tuned. We'll do that later. We'll talk about that one. I want to move us on to maybe Moraine's plotline, which we spent quite some time talking about in the previous episode, about how the invention of a new plotline involving Moraine might screw up season two. And one of the things that we said was they can't make her the star of the show, and they also can't keep her away from one of the boys for too long.
Yep.
So having seen season two, do you feel like they screwed up with respect to those two statements that we have?
No. Timing, I think, was ideal. Like having Rand and Celine be able to build a relationship, but then having Moraine interrupt that relationship and then get back in with Rand, then have a convergence of Moraine and Lanfear and Swan and Rand. Because we said if you give Moraine a really stupid thing that doesn't make sense to do, her whole Kyrian thing, like I know like other people out there disagree with this, but the Kyrian plot line with Moraine and all the stuff that happens there from episode 4 on, up through episode 7 at least, I think really worked. I have a different opinion about the land stuff, but the Moraine stuff they did it really well, better than I actually thought they were going to, especially after like the first two episodes. I was like, what's happening with this character?
Right. Yeah. That's what I would say too. I think it started and I was like, what is Moraine doing? And when episode 7 ended, I'm like, this is like exactly what Moraine should have been doing. And she's gotten to that point where she's still helping Rand. Now, having said that, I don't know what Moraine's plot line was when you account for episode 8. Because I felt like episode 8 was she was given something to do and she did it. But it just felt out of place with respect to everything else that was happening. Because yes, she was not part of that main battle in the books. But to have her on the sidelines, but still, it was just, you know, like it just
literally
felt,
on the sidelines.
Yeah, exactly. It was just very odd how it happened. I think it worked because just the pacing of how that episode was, I think there was not a lot of that, but I just felt like it's a poor use of a very strong character that you've shown. And if they would have somehow given her a more main kind of fight person instead of just being affecting it from the sidelines, it might have made sense. I don't know how they could have done it. I don't know which.
Also, you feel do you think that? There's really a waygate sitting on a beautiful beach that nobody's doing anything with? Like,
I mean, there was
how many waygates are there near Falmouth? Like, what's going on here? How far did Moraine and Land walk? I don't. So anyway, no, I agree with you. I think the Moraine plotline was probably the weakest. I don't think they screwed up season 2 because of it, but it did suck up some oxygen out of the room that could have been spent in other ways, like with Matt, like we just talked about, or even just like further developing the like Anver plotlines or maybe the Swan, you know, arrangement. The kind of, I think the first episode or two and the last in episode 7 were like the weakest for me because it didn't feel like there was much going on in the first couple episodes, and then I didn't like the confrontation with Swan. I'm just not sure what they were going for there, and it didn't really work for me as well as I think they hoped it would.
By the way, that waygate was at Tommen Beachhead. Yeah, Tommen Beachhead is where the waygate led to. Yeah,
yeah, and there's not like a hot dog vendor, hot dog vendor out there. You know. Some, you know, sunscreen and mojitos and pina coladas. And, like, what's going
and
on?
And that is, you know,
it's a beautiful beach.
You both.
I think they did. That's where the wave came when the Shanchen landed.
They wiped away everything but the wave.
The only thing left was, yeah.
I'm there. There's just a corpse of the little girl hanging around somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's maybe, again, it's one of those episode 8 kind of anomalies, which is, bringing so many people, and Jordan suffered with this two times
right.
in books. All of a sudden, you converge everyone back into the same place. And where do you put them all? And how do you give them all something relevant to be doing to be easily understood as part of it? So, yeah, I would say
that. How do you get them there so they don't all walk in the same door?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
And be like, how did you get there?
No, but I would say, generally speaking, they did not screw up season 2 as far as it related to Moraine's kind of like separate storyline. I think they were close.
I don't know. I don't know. I felt as the season progressed, I was more and more into whatever Moraine was doing, especially when she showed up at the end of episode 4, and then how they were like trying to figure out what to do with like what Rand should do. And it was kind of like what happens with her and Rand, where she learns to, you know, almost be like, okay, I don't think I can do anything here, so I should let Rand try to do something on his own, you know, I need to trust him or whatever. So I think it worked for me as the season progressed. When it started, I was like, wait, this doesn't make sense. But I think as it progressed, if you look back and just see the Moraine plotting, I think she did really well.
I think the arm bear sequences saved Maureen's plotline.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think the confrontation between Maureen and Lanfear,
yes,
also saved that plotline. If they had left one of those two things out, it would have been just a bad plotline altogether.
Again, giving us the Lanfear Maureen stuff, and then giving us more about like Moraine's like family and the Kyrian sequence. Yeah, like that's but that is again. They found some gold there, right? And so the concerns I had early on about just like, please don't like waste our time. Those went away once I understood 4, 5, 6, 7. Those sold me on it. And it didn't end the way that I would have, right? Like it started and ended and kind of like a little bit shaky for me, but overall, like I'm happy with what we did get there and it didn't feel like I screwed it up.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like it was like borderline bad, but it was on the good side of the line. Like it was just good enough that I didn't hate it.
I'm much further.
There were parts that I loved and parts that I was like, this isn't doing anything for me at all.
Sure, sure. My needle's like further on the good. Like,
yeah,
like I'm more than just generally satisfied. I'm happy with what we got. I just don't understand some of the choices they made. So that's fair.
Yeah, I just didn't understand. Like, okay, now you're in, like, oh, you're going to go into the ways with Lanfear? What's going to happen? No, you're going to be there for 30 seconds.
You're not talking to Swan.
Like, no. Well, I mean, sure, but I just feel like it's 30 seconds into that, and then you're just stranded, and you just are not part of the main happening of like this big battle. It just felt odd. Because you've clearly made a choice that this is your main character, but then they're not really part of the battle. I mean, she got her power back, right? We didn't really talk about Lan and the Lan aspect of it, right? But Lan helped get her power back. Like, I don't know if we talked about that, but like, how did they use Lan well enough? I guess
I think that's a whole. Did they use Lan well enough in season 2 is a podcast episode.
Yes.
I don't think that that's like today's episode because that'll be like I feel like we'll go on a 20 minute like it wasn't part of what we discussed and
you
I
have
feel
thoughts?
Like we could go down. I have thoughts and I don't want to like I want to like go through at least some of the things that we said. Did they screw up? Because we could talk about Lanfear for the entire hour.
One more Moraine thing before we move on, which is in the previous episode I talked a little bit about the beginning of Dragon Reborn, Maureen and Perrin.
Oh, the Tinker, the Tinker informant.
Yeah, the Tinker informant.
Yeah.
And they did that in the show. It was Bail Domon that shows up. But she's in the mountains. She's in a cabin. She's hiding out. She got informants coming. They tied that part in.
Yep.
Really well. And so that for me, like them doing that was a really nice nod to us because like show watchers probably couldn't care less about that kind of thing. But like throwing that in from the Dragon Reborn was kind of nice. And it's also a signal to the rest of us that, hey, this is book 3 and book 2. We're not just doing the Great Hunt. We're merging in some of the Dragon Reborn stuff as well. So I thought that sequence worked really well. That's something we talked about in the previous
episode. And also something with like you just mentioned that one. Also, that's a merge of the Varen Suan Moraine scene, the beginning of the Great Hunt. That's a merge of Varen being integrated into the search for like and the Dragon Reborn and his awareness there and her connection with like the looking for the others like Black Aja mix into all those things. All those things I think were we talked about Black Aja plot. Like if we don't get a Black Aja plot, I think we got the right amount of that with Leandrin and Varen. And like the warder, you know, like you see Maxim there and Alana and Ivan kind of like looking in on this idea, like who do they need to be worried about? And kind of pointing out some people we know are Black Aja. You have that whole sequence with Liana and Varen and Moraine and the Moraine sent me kind of adaptation. Like the Moraine, Varen, Black Aja, White Tower, Aes Sedai, very successful. And so I feel like it did handle those things about, like, how much time did we spend in the White Tower? I think just enough. I think that was, I think we got just enough White Tower. So I'm really happy with that too.
Yep, I agree with that. One of the things we talked about was the probably the most important thing that they could have done to not screw up season two. And that is, we said if they would screw up season two if they made Hopper talk like in the Jungle Book. Do you feel like the dream sequence stuff that they showed with Hopper, was that enough to avoid a screw up? Because they didn't move his mouth, but they did other sort of dream vision sequence type things.
I mean,
yes. I don't feel too attached to it. So it's like the Wolf Brothers, like, I'm okay. Like, sure. It was good.
I was so happy with the Wolf Brothers stuff. I thought they built that in. I thought Elias, Hopper, that whole sequence is one of the most endearing parts of that episode. Yeah. I think it was episode 3. I wanted more of it, right? You have Elias coming in with Ishmael, like, once they've been taken by the Shanshan, that whole sequence of the wolves come in, Perrin and Elias go out. You have the Hopper introduction, Hopper jumping up in the air. That's, like, one of the sweetest moments of that show. You have the ending with Hopper and the White Cloaks and Perrin. And the talking is not done in... We don't see the mouth move. So, yeah, like, I wanted more, but they definitely did not screw up Perrin, Wolves, Elias, White Cloak, kind of. That whole arc with Perrin, I thought, was really well done, to the point where I just didn't even need his arc in season one. I was like, this is what I wish is like, I was just like, okay, I can just ignore season one. And really, like, it's interesting. There's some interesting foundation stuff in season one. Don't get me wrong. It's just, that's the arc. I mean, that was the story I was looking forward to.
He's on the right path now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What about the Aiel? We talked about the Aiel and, like, ways that they could screw up season two with respect to the Aiel. For example, we said that they needed to fight in every scene. We need to demonstrate their battle prowess. We need to probably want to see the hand.
I mean, they fought in a scene where there were only them, like the three Aiel were there, and they beat up Ivienda. So they pretty much did that.
The only thing that kept them from fighting was seeing the ocean.
Oh my gosh, that's true. I didn't even think about the fight being. Yeah, you're right. Because I was gonna I was gonna be like, no, not all, but yeah, I guess
they were, like, just walking, and they one Aiel found two other Aiel, and they fought.
I don't know what they. I wanted more. There,
I think we wanted more Aiel, like, numbers, like three Aiel just seems. I just didn't think that was realistic. Like, maybe only three made it that far, but they mentioned there was one other person with them who died. I feel like they should have been like, oh, like, where are the rest? No, they went to Tyr or something. Like they should have mentioned, like, not only four people came across the spine of the world. They're looking for this one person who's, like, really important. It just felt they had a missed opportunity there of, like, okay, you're not just, like, you know, a small community of, you know, people. There's a huge.
Well, this is that whole, like, society. You can name drop. This is a part where they should have name dropped, like you said. Ruark led these others. He's going to be.
Right.
Amy's is going to, you know.
The wise ones.
They could have even mentioned, like, I had a dream, you know, like.
Right.
You know, like, Amy's.
Yes, exactly.
Amy's told me this. And it's like, and even if they did it with hand talk or something.
We talked about that. You know?
Yeah.
We talked about that last time, and we said, like, we want to see the wise ones. We want to introduce dreaming. We want to, you know, introduce, oh, we know about things that are happening on the other side of the world because of this thing. And that didn't happen. Do you feel like that was a screw up? We said it might be a screw up, but do you feel like they screwed up, or do you think it's just a missed opportunity?
As book readers, I think it's a missed opportunity. But as people that are running the show, you know, maybe they're like, I don't want to, like, preempt. I want this to be a surprise for viewers.
Right.
Like, I want this to be like, oh, wait, they're in the dream world too, versus just kind of casually mention it and have it. You know, I can see them saying, like, we don't want to. But So yeah, as a book reader, I'm like, man, missed opportunity. There's some fun stuff you could have done here.
Right.
We've talked about it before with dreaming and showing the wise ones somehow watching on them or referencing them in
obvious. You mentioned you would have liked to have seen the wise ones watching the Lanfear and Mogeddon sequence.
Yeah, like that is a
and that didn't happen.
Like even
that
if they just kind of pulled back into the darkness and then they showed two people and looking at each other and they do hand talk. You know, or like, yeah. You know, and but they're dressed differently and then they, right. You know, whatever, or they just communicate somehow like you can. It's just showing up. They know what their other one's saying, but they've learned to kind of communicate without speaking, whatever. They could have done some fun kind of dream stuff with that. But that's a.
But it's a missed opportunity.
I think it's like
the show does not suffer for the lack of that.
No, I don't think so. I think it's a missed opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, having said that, the amount of screen time that Eel had was probably enough for what they showed. I think, yes, they could have showed a few more things or name dropped and, you know, hinted. But I think for what they, how much we saw of the Eel is probably, you know, okay. I mean, we just spoke about dreaming. So did you, I thought they wouldn't go into dreaming as much as they did. So,
yeah,
you know, they surprised me in how much they went into it and how well they did it in the end. I mean, it was like they
definitely would have screwed up if they didn't introduce Talaramiya.
No, but like sure they introduced it, but they also like actually had Lanfear do a primer on Talaramiya. It's like, hey, you can go long distances. Time works differently. You can go visit anyone in here. Like they like had this whole concept of that, and we kind of spoke about Egwene. They went to Egwene's dream.
Yep.
So they go ahead, Matt.
No, I was gonna say, yeah, like we just said missed opportunity with the Aiel wise ones, but that doesn't bother me because they went further with dreaming than I thought they were going to. And what they gave us, like when they showed Rand like in the bed and they're both talking about him, I just remember my wife was watching it and she's like, is he there? Wait, I don't understand. Like there's this moment of like, what is this place? Right. It was like really well done visually. And like when they dropped Ishamael out of his dream, because she's like, oh, you got to go. Right. Like,
yeah,
I think Lanfear coming into Rand's dream and like making it very palpable that like he's having a dream, but all of a sudden he's standing up and he's talking to people and then they're moving in a dream world. Very satisfied. Really a strong part of why season two I think was strong as
rewatchable TV. It's one of those things that every time I watch the dream sequences, I'm paying very close attention to everything that's going on, and it's, you know, increasingly obvious each time that they're dreams because Lanfear has very short hair in the dreams, very long hair in the real world.
Yeah. That is the sort of expertise in dreaming that we want to look
at. You come to expect from the Gleeman at the bar side.
It's like, if Lanfear has short hair,
the distinguished Gleeman at the Dusty Wheel.
How do we know we're in Telrunrioid? If Lanfear has short hair, clearly. This is Telrunrio. She doesn't know how to change hair length in Telrunrio. She did it once.
Absolutely.
And she
not.
Made it short. But no, even at the end, like, you know, like we're not sure if Mogeddon and Lanfear were in the dream world in that, you know, sequence.
Yes, we are, because her hair was long.
You mean it wasn't? By your
in the real world.
No, no. In the dream world, it's shorter, right?
No, her hair was long when she was talking to Mogeddon.
Yeah, so that's not Talrunriad by your...
So it's the real world.
That's what I'm saying. So it... Well, okay, sure. However that worked, you're right. They went so much farther than in Talrunriad that when we do see the Wise Ones and all that happen and Egwene learning how to dream, it's just going to be... they've laid the foundation really well for everyone watching the show.
Yep. Agreed. And this goes a little bit to, I mean, it's not like exactly on that, but you do see some of this from the effects, right? Just the overall show effects when it comes to like transitioning between worlds, even like the channeling, when you see Mogeddon at the very end doing this little spider thing, and like it feels like I did, it didn't take me out, if that makes sense. I stayed in watching it. Even like Ishmael fighting Egwene at the end, like the channeling you see the Shan Chan do, like when they're testing, like the fireballs, right. Like overall the effects. I think what was the comment we made was take effects seriously. Twice as much time on them. The sets are important, and we should feel that. I felt that, like the stuff in Kyrian that they did, like places they went. It felt like we were in those places much more so than, you know, than I was worried about when it came to like the bigger challenge they had right. with the season two and like expanding the world. There was the only time I've ever felt like it was when they do like the Falma scenes from like a high balcony. Those are the moments where I was like, okay, I can feel that I'm in kind of that movie effects thing where they're showing me the big thing. And it's like kind of, I would kind of step out of it in those moments, but there were very, very few throughout the entire season where I didn't feel like they
like those moments.
Did you?
yeah. I really love the wide shots. And they do feel, you know, a little more computer generated than a lot more computer generated than the regular sets. But, I like the way that they make the world feel bigger.
Yeah.
Some of the sets feel very congested and constrained. And I like the wide view of saying, oh, you might be seeing this one street, but there's a million streets.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I like how, you know, we've talked about how much more the world looks bigger or feels bigger or how much better.
Even the ways felt bigger right. in that one shot.
Right. Like the sets or the settings and the cities and Kyrian and all of that, you know, was a step up. But it wasn't just like, it was a significant step up. Like season one was like, to some degree, like season two in terms of how it felt, it would have been, you know, better sure. for so like in so many ways. So I think like it's there's so many good things in season two, and I think when it first started or when we first saw the trailer, we're like, oh, it looks so much better. The channeling is so much better. All these things look better, but it's understated, I think, in how important it is to make the whole season feel better. I think
so what you're saying is not only did they not screw up season two, but they excelled at season two. They exceeded our expectations.
Right. I think like these are the things like you have to get right, but they didn't just get it right. They made the choices that were like brilliant. You know, sure, the fire dragon was big and huge and, you know, maybe not what you would want to.
It worked for me.
But it worked in like, it didn't look cheesy because of how it looked. It was maybe cheesy because it's a dragon, a fire dragon. Maybe that's why, but not because it looked like bad, like CGI Trollocs in episode 8 last year, exactly. Right? It just, you know, it just, yeah. So I think it was just like, oh, maybe I don't agree with the choice there, but hey, it looked good. So sure.
It worked for me. That was one of my favorite moments, actually. I like the fact that we got to see a little dragon thing. Or a big dragon thing, I should say. It was weird that the fire dragon was breathing normal stuff instead of a normal stuff breathing fire. But that's a weird observation. Now, you've been quiet for a few minutes. What are your thoughts?
I mean, you brought up like this idea of like, okay, not only did they not screw it up, they excelled, right? We threw out a lot of things when we were talking. It was like, we need to see Lan killing Miradrol. We need to see introduce new characters that help Moraine understand something. We need to get like. We need to like, did they don't just like get us to Faldara. We need to kind of build up and finally get out there. We need them to take these effects seriously. We're talking about, but then we needed a big battle at the end. So that's what I want to ask you about. Like, I feel like we got halfway there. The conflict of scale taken seriously, like definitely felt like an improvement from season one. And again, I know a lot of people, every time I bring this up, they're like, budget, budget, budget. This is TV, TV, TV. Totally understand this idea.
Totally good.
And I think it got us, like, I was much more happy with the conflict of scale. It still felt like it was like, hey, if you're going to computer generate, like, 20 ships in the harbor, computer generate 100, because that's like, that was like, right, if you're gonna like show like those many people like charging towards the tower, show me at the walls that that many people are there too. You know, so there were, there were some moments in episode 8 where I was like, yes, improved, not to, it did not exceed my expectations, but it did meet them, as in what I hoped. Like, I just needed to feel bigger. I needed to feel real. I needed to feel more people there. That was there. I wanted to be, I wanted those expectations to be exceeded in that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, I get it. The battle sequence itself was well done. The individual combat, each scene of combat was really well done. Yeah. But the scale was off. It still felt like 50 white cloaks, not 5,000
in the city.
And they gave us, and they gave us the 2 second kind of shot of them charging.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, are they going to, like, are we going to see this? And you almost thought that you would see it, but then I think you're right. Maybe it is budget, but I also think it's time, because they had to spend time with Perrin. They had to spend, I mean, they didn't have to spend time with Nynaeve and Elaine just sitting in the courtyard for a while, but they had to spend time with everyone.
Really, they got to show us pushing her arrow through a leg. I mean, that's important.
Yeah, but I just feel like I think that's probably what it was, is they had to spend time in with the characters in a, with many people in a smaller setting. If there was one of those characters who was in the thick of the battle where there was a lot of people, maybe they could have done it. But I just felt like they didn't have time to show the walls.
I just feel like they shouldn't have said, if they just, and I think it was just setting expectations. Don't say tens of thousands of Yeah, like take that, just remove that, and I think it totally would have worked. In other words, we don't have to believe the Shan Chan have tens of thousands of people there, because you haven't shown us tens of thousands of people. So why did you tell us tens of thousands of people? It was that, like, this was like an unforced error. It was like one of those moments of like, look, they were in the city, like you, like show explosions happening all over the place. I don't know. It was, that was, again, that's my, I think, just like episode 8.
We needed the Rogue One treatment to make it feel like there were battles everywhere and it was a real war, and not, and we were only seeing one part of the front.
Yes. Like, and I wish they had given us a little bit more like that was happening everywhere. And I think, like you're saying, I think on us, the time aspect, like they would have had to have given us 10 more minutes of all these battles and feeling like time's passing and people are dying. And this is a huge, and it seems like they kind of ran out of time to do that. This is that whole episode, 8 episodes to trying to tackle as much as they're trying to tackle. So I still felt like it's a fun episode to go back and watch. That that idea of conflict of scale doesn't hold up. Even like if I go back and watch it, it's not that it holds up. It's just you have to kind of just go, okay, I don't care. And I'm just going to focus on this is a fun thing. Because it is fun. Like you go back and watch it and you're like, this is a really fun episode. It's just that one thing where it's like, I don't think they screwed up. I just think they left, they still have opportunity to give us that big battle. And I don't think this was it.
Yeah. I mean, I think the one way they could have done it is if they showed like one Bornhold going through one like gate, the other Bornhold going through another gate, Valda going through another, and then they somehow made it to a place where they're like, okay, let's get to the tower now. I think that would have made some more sense, but this, it seemed like it was a huge, big charge, and then they're like, okay, now we can't show you everything, so we're just going to follow this one group of people because that's what we care about.
Yeah. It felt like Navy SEAL Team 6 going through surgically through the streets in guerrilla warfare, and it didn't feel like the whole city was on fire,
which again,
because we saw that wide shot, remember when Matt looks out and Sean Mayer looks out from the balcony, we see this huge city, and then the battle takes place in this like corridor where that Ingtar is like, I can hold off 50 men from here. That's,
I mean, again, just don't,
the battle we saw,
don't tell me there's 10 the don't tell me there's tens of thousands. That's, if you take that out, take that out, I can believe the Shan Chan are up and down the coast and they leave, they have already established, they just let you go and do your normal thing as long as you swear the oaths. And they have this location that they don't believe anyone would ever try to attack. But it's like the Shan Chan would have known that the White Cloaks were just waiting around the waiting around the bend. Like they, you had to make them really, really incompetent, which they did. They did show us that. Like Lady Surath, like she, these are not like These are not the Empire's like greatest generals, clearly, you know, and they definitely rely on like the Demone to establish kind of like the hold, you know.
Right. If only they had brought in some creatures over that can scout from the sky. Yes. But what do you think? I mean, you know, they did show us the White Cloak camp. Did you think that was like scale from a scale standpoint that looked like a big army?
No, it felt kind of like when, from the show. I mean, from the books, I was like, yeah, like they didn't have that many people when they were attacking.
I think it was like 4,000 or something.
Yeah, like I was 2,000 okay or 4,000. Like, I was okay in that sense, but then and then they told when us they how got many they to. Had.
Yeah,
yeah, like yeah. It again. And we could do a whole show on scale and the scale of this conflict itself. I think that's where one of those where I'm like, no, still. Still lots of opportunity to give us. And I think with the I'm going to jump into season 3. So we won't talk about that. But yeah, Brian, when you said, hey, you're quiet, like what else? For me, when I think back about this, it's all the things that I didn't know that I was going to love. That's what really, like, it's not only did they not screw it up, like they exceeded my expectations with they. I don't care how this offends book readers. They did Forsaken much better than Robert Jordan. Like they just gave us Forsaken in such a really, really cool way, an interesting way that we just didn't get in the books in most situations. So like that was a huge surprise. The Heroes of the Horn and the Horn thing totally worked for me. Like I go back and I'm like, oh, you know, I know we joked about like whether or not he blows a horn or not, what are we going to get or not? Like that whole sequence really, really works overall for the season. Like actually digging into Moraine's background, like I didn't anticipate I was going to love that. I just loved that a lot. Like there's the whole the Brown Aja detectives totally worked for me. You know, like stuff that I didn't realize I was going to love, I loved from this season in ways that like Elaine. Like how did I become an Elaine fan? I have no idea. Like, but
no idea.
But like, so
Kira Coveney killing it.
Yeah. The testing, like even knowing the testing.
Wow, we didn't even talk about
Even knowing about the testing from the books, fantastic job.
Like, yeah.
Giving us the testing. So it was the stuff that we didn't even talk about really about how not to screw up season 2. That was the stuff that just carried it over the edge for me as far as just how much I enjoyed the season itself. So the other things are kind of quibbles in my mind of like, oh man, how much more would I have loved? That's like, how much more would I have loved season 2 if they had done this better?
You know, and speaking of, I have to inform you guys that they did in fact screw up season 2, for one reason that we have not talked about yet, which is when we had the episode and JordanCon, 6 months ago, we agreed. Or at least I agreed. I agreed unilaterally that they would screw up season 2 if they did not hire distinguished professor Michael Livingston to help them with their battle sequences. And as we just described, they clearly didn't do that. He wouldn't have been
so
silly enough to push an arrow through without taking the fletching off. So clearly they did not hire Michael Livingston. So therefore, ergo. Screwed up season 2.
So heed our advice or whatever for any and every upcoming season of The Wheel of Time. Call Michael Livingston.
Amazon, if you don't want to screw up seasons 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and a movie, hire Michael Livingston. There you go. Done.
By the way, I did forget to mention one. The Sean Chan, Demone, Soldam relationship.
Wow.
Rena, yeah. Egwene stuff again.
Episode six was, I think,
the most highly rated this season. I can't remember, or it was one of the most highly rated.
I think 8 is still like. Last I looked, and it was a little. It was like 9.1 or something on IMDb.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
It was still like really high up there because I think for the casual watcher, that was a very like fast paced, action, and you know, really cool dragon at the end. Like that's just. I feel like for TV, that is really good TV.
Yeah. No, again, it's a fun episode. And
yeah,
my family, who's only read a little bit into the books, both my wife and daughter really enjoyed that episode. a lot. So it's not shocking. But to see that adaptation side, the adaptation of Rena and Egwene was just one of the most like horrifying, but
like emotionally
well done adaptations into the
and we didn't really talk about it that much 6 months ago, but they could have very easily screwed that up. They could have very easily made it like a very cartoony, unbelievable thing that Renner is just a monster that would like a just mean and you know whatever. And the fact that Renner was such a compelling character, it's like I think Caitlin said, she's cool, but I hate her, but she's cool. And like that's a really fine line to run, and they did it. And if they hadn't done that, like if Renner had just been like just slightly more cartoonishly evil, almost more like Surath, then it wouldn't have been as impactful. You know, it would have been a missed opportunity and possibly a screw up.
So I mean, I think that last thing we said, one of the last things we said was, they have to stick the landing. So how do you not screw up
the landing?
How do you not screw up season two? You have to like stick the landing, and then we kind of spoke about, you know, how do you start and think. So
do you think they stuck the landing?
Yeah, I think they did. I mean, we watched this together, right, Brian? We were
we didn't watch it with you, Matt.
Yeah, sorry. I know.
When we watched it, we were like just like, whoa. I mean, going into it, we had our hopes high, and I think they showed so many things during that episode where we had already gotten the emotional episode with episode 6. We had all the scheming, and we just got like really big moments. So it was just good to end on a high because you had all these big moments happening. You can talk about the metaphysics. You can talk about arcs. You can talk about all these things maybe not landing. Exactly. You can talk about all these things in episode 8, which you might be like, that's not how I would have thought of it. Oh, they should have done that. You could have all like these quibbles. But in terms of actual feeling of watching the show end and then have Mogedion show up and have that exchange, there's like it felt like I was like, I can't wait for the next season. And when season one had ended, I was like, oh, like I just,
you know, for once, honest, you are correct, because IMDb agrees with you. According to IMDb, episode 8 has a 9 out of 10 stars rating on IMDb. Episode 6 has an 8.8.
Okay.
So viewers, IMDb raters put episode 8 as the top rated episode of the season.
What was season 1's rating for episode 8? I'm kind of curious.
Let's look.
And if that will like hold.
Season 1's finale was at 6.4.
See, yeah, I mean, I think that would translate differently for a season 3, right? Like if you end well, right? If you end on something where people are interested, it's compelling, they want to know what happens next, and they're to have such a difference of opinion from the IMDb rating side of those makes me, again, from a book reader perspective, I think the first time I watched it was pretty unique circumstance. And I remember saying at the end of it, I thought they landed it, but I was kind of shaky landing, right? When I think of like gymnastics, you know,
right.
Coming off the, like they land and like legs wobble, they take a step and they stand back up. The second time I watched it, when I could see and hear everything, which was different.
I misspoke earlier. You and I did watch the finale together twice.
That's true. watching it for the second time, I said I thought the landing was solid. I don't think that it was a 10, like I don't think it was a perfect landing, but I definitely think it was a solid landing, which is what I wanted to see, because like again, I don't think they landed it in season one, right? So like like solid landing in season two after like what I think was an amazing season is what you wanted to see, right? Like, and so that gives me a lot of hope for a season three. And I'm hopeful, honestly, that you know, when we look at the strike, which has ended, by the way, right? The strike's over. To actually, if you think about when it started, which was in July, which is like a month and a half before the show drops,
And like right ends, before the trailer came out.
Right, right before the trailer comes
like
out.
Like a week before the trailer came
which
out.
Which is when yeah. like the marketing yeah. was going to begin. And then yeah. it ends a month after, right? Like where even end of season marketing you couldn't get with those actors.
Right.
Right. Like to have gone through that and to see where they ended up with, like, I think they showed an audience drop of like 25% overall from season one to season two. I really hope that that is not, that doesn't affect the financial decision or the commitment on Amazon's part to say, let's, we've got to get to at least season four because we've got to give season three its greatest opportunity to succeed in a position where hopefully we don't have COVID and we don't have strikes and we can go in with an already established IP. We have really, really compelling in like stuff coming up with, we know in season three from the book, The Shadow Rising. Like this is to not greenlight season four would absolutely negatively affect season three. You know what I mean? Like you've got to give season four, in my mind, you've got to run with season four to know if you have something here, because these two first years, it's really hard. How do you judge the impact that that strike had overall on those numbers and viewership numbers? Because you see the ratings, and the ratings are certainly higher. I have lots of Wheel of Time fan friends who are like, okay, you won me back with season two, right? Like yeah. season one, I gave up. I was just hated it. I didn't understand how people could have liked it. Now I go back and yeah. see season one. I'm not as bothered by it, but season two I thought was really, really well done, and I hope they get more seasons. Yeah. So I have tons of friends that I've seen posting on social media or have contacted me where I'm like, oh, wow, like they're actually really happy with season two. So I think they won back more book fans than they lost with season two. I think they definitely lost some, you know, not that those book fans were the most important number of viewers. They really had to convince overall viewers. And to see a rating of 9.0 for that last episode, I'm hopeful that's indicative of the staying power that they'll have from viewership running into season three.
I can't believe that you, Matt, as the creator of a book club, would say that the book readers are not important.
Like I said, not as important to Amazon, I think, as far as viewership numbers are concerned. I mean, I'm pretty sure the showrunner right. has also said comments where they're like, similarly, but I don't have an exact quote, though.
Yeah. That's fair. All right. So I think we like recapped everything from the How Did We Not Screw Up Season 2 episode. Is there anything that I missed? Anything that we should cover before we...
I mean, Lanfear. Lanfear. Matt. We didn't cover Lanfear. Matt. Like...
We got the anything, date. We got the Lanfear date anything, times four.
Right. Anything like, did they get Lanfear? Like, did they screw up Lanfear in any way?
No, but this is the point. No, they didn't at all. And that was honestly like really, really impressive because other characters, I was like, what? But with Lanfear, I was like, how do you get Lanfear so well done? But the amount of new fans of Lanfear is the greatest indicator that they definitely did not screw up season two, because the amount of people that love this villain of the Wheel of Time coming out of this season is a sight to behold.
This just occurred to me, but the reason, a potential reason why the writers are so good at creating Lanfear, Dana, Ashamael, Leandrin, the villains of the show, the writers are psychopaths. They're all.
All the writers are forsaken?
No, I'm kidding.
All the writers are forsaken. Hey. That's what you just said, Brian. You run a fan club, no, like, and you just called all the
writers. How did these writers do so great on these like amazing villains, and then some of the heroes just kind of fall flatter than we would like? I think that's just a really interesting observation. That probably says something about the writers.
Well, maybe they just really enjoy. I mean, what I think it says is, it's probably a lot more fun to write. I don't know. I'm not an author, but
it's more fun to write the bad guys.
That's what it sounds like to me. Yeah,
exactly.
And by the way, it's more fun to like Lanfear than it is to not like Lanfear.
So. Matt's like,
that's
like,
fair.
Like, how can you not like, you know, make Lanfear such a great character and like her? Like, it's so obvious to everyone now. I've been saying this for 30 years.
Your co-host on the Light's work is not so impressed with Lanfear.
It's true.
I think Lanfear is, I think, obviously one of the highlights of season two. And it's just, and I'm not just saying that to suck up to Matt, but
no,
Natasha O'Keefe really killed it.
Right. And the writing there. If they, had like Lanfear do, like not do the things that she did throughout the season, it would have been a bad season. Like she held it together. In terms of the plot,
if we had half the Lanfear,
like that we got, just the plot. If you look at the plot arc, like you can't, like literally everything she had a hand in everything, and you know, least of all, you know, it's just really, really well done. Not just as a antagonist, just as a tool for good storytelling. So, you know, the writers did their job.
The writers did their job. That's the tagline of this episode.
WGA.
Let's leave it there. Matt, any final thoughts before we wrap up?
Only that I look forward to us someday recording How Not to Screw Up Season 3.
Yeah. Coming soon to a podcast near you.
We need to, like, you know, we were talking about this. We need that ambient crowd noise in the background for that.
Crowd noise.
Yeah.
Make it a live recording.
Yeah.
A fake live recording.
Yeah.
Honest, any final thoughts from you before we sign off?
I just can't wait. You know, season three is getting close to maybe and wrapping up. So, like, you know, we're going to start getting maybe, I don't know, it'll be cool if we start getting stuff. The strike is over. So it's just it's kind of sad we didn't have any marketing for, you know, like we just said. It'll be interesting to see what we get in the next few weeks and months. Hopefully not as long as between season one and season two.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. I'd love to have a shorter longing this time.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, let's leave it there. Thanks for listening to the show. If you are a fan of the show, please leave us a review at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we will see you next time at the bar side. Barside Chats is a Dusty Wheel production. Jointly hosted by Brian, the Gleeman, and Matt, the Innkeeper. If you would like to support this podcast, please leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Or you may email us at podcast@